to this question that says, can you speak about the importance of metta in cultivating our meditative practice? Loving ourselves seems to be the essential prerequisite to successful mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Metta, you know, is an antidote. I mean, it has several different effects, but one is that we use metta as an antidote for ill will and anger and resentment, usually towards, you know, other people, because, you know, all of our associations, you know, personal relationships, anger, ill will, and resentment to people that presumably have hurt you or threatened you, you know, the mind holds that. So that's one of the hindrances. You know, ill will is a hindrance to gaining concentration. And so some people may have more or less of ill will. A person who doesn't have, you know, a lot of ill will or resentment, you know, may not need to practice that so much. But of course, even the Buddha himself, who didn't have any ill will or hatred, he radiated that metta, because it's the, when the mind is free from the ego, then metta is very easy, because it's our ego that holds on to its memories and separates yourself from the others. But real metta, and metta towards oneself, because if you have self-loathing or low self-esteem, oh, I'm this way, I'll never be nothing, this, or you're blaming yourself because you did some bad things in the past and beating yourself, then of course we also have to have friendliness toward ourself and know, okay, we make mistakes, everyone makes mistakes, but you're just another living being. And, you know, when you do metta, starting with oneself, you shouldn't think of yourself as such, just see this body as another living being, and just know that this living being that you may identify as your body, it has its own, you know, problems. It has its own greed, hatred, and delusion. It's made a lot of mistakes, and so on. But knowing that underneath all of that is the ultimately, you know, is the pure mind, and that underneath all of the separation, the individual egos and the histories and the identities of each individual person, when we come down to that dimension of silent awareness, everybody's mind basically is equal. You know, when the mind has transcended all self-identification and the past and the future and is resting in, you know, what we call pure awareness, that pure awareness is essentially the same, you know, in everybody's mind. And so we kind of identify with that, and knowing that everybody affects everybody else. So, but anyway, so it's, the metta is good to do when you start meditation, when you sit down to meditate, after sitting down and adjusting your posture, maybe taking some deep, slow breaths, just initially kind of getting in. Then if you know you have certain issues with ill will or resentment, or even if you don't, you can still spend a few minutes just to, and you can combine it with breathing, actually. You can take a deep breath, and as you're breathing in, you feel the oxygen in your lungs and the oxygen transferring to your blood and charging up your cells and molecules. That's like matter to your own body, because we abuse our own body by not getting proper exercise, by not breathing fresh air, by putting a lot of junk into our body and pollution. We actually harm our body. And so doing things like yoga or deep breathing, these are like metta for your body, because the body likes that. You know, it's good to get some exercise, and especially deep breathing. So actually that's what I recommended to people, that you can combine it. You can kill two birds with one stone, so to speak. That you take a deep breath, and you're thinking, may I be well, happy, free from suffering. And on the out-breath, you're thinking, may all beings be well, happy, free from suffering. You know, breathing in, may I be free from ill will, anger, enmity. Breathing out, may all beings be free from ill will, anger, enmity. Breathing in, may I cultivate mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Breathing out, may all beings concentrate mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. I mean, you know, you can, there's a lot of different ways you can do that, you know, whatever phrases you want to use. But that's, you know, sending metta to yourself by taking, you know, some deep, slow breaths to oxygenate the blood. And knowing that we all have the, you know, the power and wisdom of the Buddha, we all have that within ourselves. And that's why also perhaps the last 15 minutes of, you know, the day today will, I teach people how to chant Namo Buddhaya, which means that, you know, Namo Buddhaya, that we have all the wisdom of the Buddha is also within our own mind. And so sometimes we call that the inner Buddha, that you know, the same state, potential for enlightenment and purity and wisdom in intrinsic in every being. So in that way, by cultivating these thoughts, it's like, you know, sending metta to yourself and fortifying, knowing that underneath all of our conditioned weaknesses and other greed, hatred, and delusion, there is this dimension of awareness, purity, of enlightenment. And you know, we identify with that more than identifying with so much of our negative stuff, although we have to be aware of that. So anyway, depending on, you know, how much you know, defilements and so on that you have within yourself, is the amount that you know, you may spend in cultivating you know, the metta. But at some point, that metta has to go from just repeating phrases to basically just a kind of a pure vibration and a feeling of oneness and openness. It's only when the barriers of the ego have been broken down in the mind that then their awareness feels like it's permeating everything. And that's sort of real metta. It's when the mind is like the Buddha says in this, in those phrases, you know, he pervades the first quarter, the second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, with the metta, it's boundless, and you know, it's gone beyond the self, you know. But so, you know, metta, it's also kind of a liberation. But you know, depending on, you know, how much each person can decide whether, you know, how much they're going to practice that or not. But you know, the main thing is, you know, it's an antidote for the ill will, but it's also developing that sense of, you know, oneness with all sort of means. And so that's part of wisdom. I mean, metta is also has an element of the wisdom to it. As if it goes toward breaking down the sense of self and I, but it's the clinging to your anger and resentment that's continually reinforcing your sense of self. So first by seeing the nature of anger, ill will and resentment, and knowing that the other person especially, they're caught in the same delusion as you are, and the whole society and through the course of evolution we've all been programmed and have collected and accumulated all this greed, hatred and delusion, and we've all affected each other with greed, hatred and delusion. And so that's the basis of not holding hatred or resentment to the other. It's also seeing that that person, we've all been related at one time or another in our many lifetimes. And even the person you might be having ill will toward now, he could have been one of your relatives, your mother or father or relative in the past life. We don't know that, but when you think about it like that, it helps you to let go of this petty little quarrels and petty anger and resentment you have toward people that usually for very superficial reasons. Although we cling to our reasons and the mind turns it into, no, this is the most important thing in the world. They insulted my hairdo. Or they, they caused me a dirty name. And they tried to steal my job. So all this, like what I was mentioning this morning about analyzing your distracting thoughts, so this resentment, ill will and so on keeps on coming in your mind, this is the way that you have to apply this kind of sort of reflection on it until you can see, yes, and the mind will then drop it, drop the particular negative state, and allow you to get back into, then go into the deeper, go back to your meditation practice, the normal awareness, concentration and mindfulness. This question is, I have a question on Sakkaya Ditti versus mana. I'm assuming everyone knows these words, Sakkaya Ditti and mana. Some of the non-Sri Lankan people might. So Sakkaya Ditti means the sense of self. And mana is basically it's conceit, or the thought of I, or conceit. Basically, like pride and conceit, mana, identifying with the self. So there's a belief in the self, but then there's the clinging and identifying that sense of self as I, and then being prideful of it, and tightly clinging to that. It's called the I conceit. Sakkaya Ditti basically is the belief in a self. A ditti is a view. It means inside the thoughts of I, me, and mine are behind everything that you do. Everything that you do or think, there's this feeling, whether it's conscious or it's unconscious, of I, me, or mine. And believing in this as being one's soul or self, somehow this I belongs to you. That is basically the Sakkaya Ditti. And but basically it's also kind of mana. You know, the ego. I mean, they're closely related. They're intertwined. But Sakkaya Ditti, a Sotapanna overcomes Sakkaya Ditti. Because in the deep meditation, when you have this sort of, you know, entering the stream experience, or the mind opens up, and the last trace of self, I, or other, and all dualistic perceptions melt in the mind, disappear. Even if it just lasts for a finger snap, sometimes it's just a kind of a flash like that, like a camera lens opening and closing, but it's so powerful that in that moment you saw how, but there was still consciousness. You didn't go into like a void or blank state. You saw how the self is an illusion. The sense of I was an illusion, because you experienced awareness but without any type of I, me, or mine, or other identification in it, just a vast sort of empty awareness. But then you lose that, and you come back to the sense of self in your mind. But now you know that the sense of self is an illusion, so that it means overcoming Sakkaya Ditti. You no longer believe that it's something eternal, you know, like your individual soul or something. You see how the sense of self is created in your mind because of your clinging and attachment. And in deep meditation, when you let go of hearing, seeing, tasting, smelling, touching, and thinking, when you let go of the idea, even I am meditating, at a certain point, that I begins to disappear, because it's only a thought created in your mind. And but even after you have that experience, the sense of I will still be in the mind, but now you're not deluded by it. You know it's just an illusion, but it's still there. It's like a shadow that's following you around. But you don't take it so seriously anymore. You can kind of joke at your, laugh at your mistakes and so on. You don't take yourself so seriously. And but mana lingers in the mind until the stage of even the anagami still has subtle traces of mana. That means the thought of I am. So mana basically is the thought of I am in the back of the mind, but Sakkaya Ditti is the, you know, clinging to the sense of the self or the. So anyway, that's just a basic kind of the difference between them. So the mana, the sense of I, only gradually fades away stage by stage. So a person who enters the stream has seen the illusion of the I, but it's still there. But as you go on practicing, because you know it's an illusion and you don't keep building it up too much, gradually it gets weaker and weaker and weaker with each stage. The once returning stage gets weaker still, and the never returning stage it gets weaker still, but still there in a subtle remnant in the back of the mind. But with the Arahant stage it's totally purged or purified. That's why if you read the list of mental factors, the anagami still has, you know, mana and ignorance. So mana is equivalent to ignorance in that level, because they still haven't gotten rid of the traces of the ego. Does that still cause attachment to like being reborn in heavenly worlds or formless realms and things like that? So, see that those, there's only two written questions. Does anybody have another question you want to ask by raising the hand?
Venerable sir, while doing breathing meditation, watching the breath, there is a point of time where the breath, you don't feel the breath. And in fact, that point of time, you also don't have any sensations or any thoughts. What should you do?
Nothing. Just enjoy that. Don't lose awareness, though. So, you know, when you gain deeper stages of concentration and mindfulness, and even the feeling of your body may start to disappear, because these are just perceptions in your mind. Even the idea of breathing is a perception in your mind, based on some sensation, of course. So, because of our identification, we keep on, the mind creates this perception of I am meditating, this is my body, I am meditating, this is my breathing, and so on. These are the sanya and the sankaras within our mind. But as you gain deeper concentration and mindfulness and the wisdom, then those perceptions start to melt away, and the feeling of your body may disappear. Usually that's what happens first, or feelings of certain body parts might disappear, like you lose the feeling of your hands or feet, or the definite shape of the body will become very kind of transparent. The hard edges will become kind of transparent and very light, and then may even totally dissolve. But there's still awareness. And there may be sensations, but they're not connected to anything that you could call my body. It would be just like little dots, sensations arising and vanishing in empty space. And the same with sounds. But the sense of I still may be there in your mind. But then even that may disappear. But people get scared when these things happen sometimes, because they're afraid they're going to dissolve, or they're going to lose their mind, or they're going to won't be able to get their mind back. But this is, you know, nothing bad will happen, and there's nothing to be afraid about it. But that's why wisdom is necessary. Wisdom that knows that it's okay. That if the sense of I starts to disappear, that's what's supposed to happen. But people are afraid, oh, I'm going to die. The fear of death is what jerks people back into their comfortable little me and my body. Oh, I got my body back. But then they got their suffering back too. So anyway, all of this, it just takes a lot of meditation practice to get all these various types of experiences over and over and over again. You begin to learn about them. You begin to understand all the nuances of it, and all the ego's little games. And that's really what vipassana is. I mean, studying your mind from moment to moment, and studying how feeling, perception, volition, consciousness, and the mind is clinging to that. And that's really what vipassana is. It's studying this moment to moment phenomena that are occurring in the body and mind, and developing your understanding about anicca, dukkha, anatta. We'll probably talk more about that.
So what is the difference between moha and anicca?
basically they're the same. Moha, avidya, usually translated as ignorance, moha is delusion. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, they're the same. But when you're deluded, that means you take something for real that's not real. Or that you think that something is there when it's not there. But that, you know, that's also ignorance. So, you know, don't try to make a big distinction, you know, out of them. But usually in Sri Lanka, you know, you say lobha dosa moha. You don't say lobha dosa avidya, or whatever reason. No, things block your concentration. You know, first of all, you know, the word concentration itself is, you know, people define it in different ways. You know, they say one-pointedness. So some people think that it means your mind is absorbed in one object and you become oblivious to everything else and there's just one object filling up your whole mind. And, you know, they may call that like a kasina, if you're practicing kasina meditation. Or maybe you're practicing anapanasati and there's just a feeling of breath that fills up the whole awareness and everything else kind of disappears. But that's not the only state of concentration. We use an object to concentrate the mind because the mind is scattered. So we use something like the breathing to keep bringing our mind back. And then once the breathing, you gain concentration, I mean the breath goes on by itself. You don't have to concentrate anymore. The breath is just staying automatically as a sort of an awareness or an object in the mind or a nimitta or whatever may have arisen. But you can get blocked by clinging to that or clinging to the bliss and the quietness that arises from that concentration. You can get stuck in that. So maybe that's what you meant with this block. That means you get stuck in the happiness and the mind can just kind of stagnate and just be, you know, just absorbed in this happiness but not going anywhere further. So that is what I call being stuck, not blocked, but you're stuck in the trap of tranquility. And the Buddha never meant meditation to be like that. But instead, without getting trapped in that silence, you develop the insight into impermanence. You know, and you start deliberately being aware of the subtler and subtler sensations arising and vanishing in the whole six senses. But the breathing, you see, the concentration keeps the mind steady. And you become concentrated. Once you become concentrated, you don't have to concentrate. The vipassana arises out of that. That you're seeing you're noticing arising and vanishing of different phenomena. The breath may be one of them, but you don't have to pay attention to the breath. The breath is there all by itself. That's why now you can focus on other things, but the mind is still kept tranquil. It's like the anchor of a ship. And so even though the breath may be there, or maybe it's disappeared, but then you keep the mind, you tune it to the arising and vanishing of sensations, sounds, thoughts, just anything that may be arising, or just be aware of the awareness itself developing. If there's objects coming and going, you develop the perception of anicca. If there's nothing, all objects have disappeared, you cultivate anatta, the subtle mana that's still clinging to the, I am a good meditator. Oh, I'm almost there. Oh, you know, the little eye that's expecting something to happen. Even though everything else might have disappeared, the feeling of your body, sounds, other things, still that little eye that's clinging, that you have to then focus on that and let that dissolve in order to go beyond it. Yes, because there's the whole unconscious, subconscious mental continuum is running, you know, all the sort of thoughts, memories, and so on of the past are in the deep unconscious. And when you're no longer distracted by external things, then you'll be able to see them. And sometimes they it's like a flood. But depending on the strength of your concentration, they won't, they're kind of just, coming and going in the back of your mind. But with your mindfulness, you're not allowing them to enter your conscious mind and to disturb you. And so they just, can run into the back of the mind, and if you ignore them, then they'll just, disappear. But if you still have many thoughts, usually that's the transition in a dream state. Is the transition between ordinary consciousness and the deeper concentration is where you get images and thoughts moving through the mind, similar to when you dream, except you're meditating, but it's the same as you're dreaming when you're seeing images and thoughts and images floating through your mind. But as you develop a deeper concentration, then those get subsided.
I think you have to label it as anicca or just watch it?
No, you don't have to label it as anicca. The purpose of observing anicca, actually, this is the trick of Vipassana. I won't tell you it now, and I'll save it for tomorrow. But anicca sanya has a very specific function to it. And then you have to speed up your rate of perception by noticing these moments of hearing, seeing, tasting, smelling, touching, thinking, sensations arising and vanishing. And you let it build up speed, but without clinging to any one of them. And as it builds up speed, the mind has no time to think about any one particular one, because that's vanished and there's something else coming up. And you tune in to that, just that vanishing, 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 vanishing. There's no time for sanya to arise. The mental clinging. And that's when then the emptiness can be experienced. But we have to trick the mind out of itself. The mind gets stuck because of clinging. You hear a sound. Oh, what is that sound over there? Or you hear, oh, my poor little knee, my poor little knee. Oh, puta, 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 dua, dua, dua. The mind's, clinging to all these things coming through and bringing in the past and the future, triggering off all kind of hormones and enzymes and so on. And that's the dukkha. So the trick in Vipassana is learning how to speed up the rate of your perception so fast that the mind has no time to grab onto putta or do it. It's just a blip on a radar screen. And then at some point the mind will open up and all those sanyas disappear and you experience the emptiness and even the sense of self too. But let me talk more about that tomorrow. Okay, as I mentioned, I'm going to spend these last 15 minutes in doing the last meditation. And if you like, I invite you to join me in chanting Namo Buddhaya. It's the start of this meditation. And use it as a kind of a metta meditation. So just try to sit straight but relaxed. Those who know have done this with me before, then you can join in, or you can just listen to me chant this Namo Buddhaya one time. It's repeated over and over in a certain type of rhythm, 4 repetitions in one round. And but again, the Namo Buddhaya, homage to the Buddha, it's acknowledging that, you know, deep inside we have that intrinsic wisdom and pure mind and wisdom of the Buddha is also within our own mind. And that's what we're recognizing and trying to tune into that vibration, bringing out the Buddhaya, vibration of Buddhaya in our consciousness, the non-dual pure awareness. So just start with a few rounds of deep, slow breathing. And when I ring the gong, that means we finish the chanting one more time and finish.
Namo Buddhaya.
more slowly. Feel the heartbeat with each out-breath or with each heartbeat. Just imagine the vibration of Buddhaya filling up your own body and mind. The vibration of pure wisdom, pure awareness, pure love. Buddhaya has all three of those meanings. Just imagine the vibration of Buddhaya filling up your own body and mind, purifying negativity, purifying greed, hatred, and delusion. You can even recite that Namo Buddhaya silently in your own mind. And gradually imagine feeling radiating out of your body and mind, filling up the whole room, and gradually going outside, radiate across the city of Toronto. Send those vibrations back to your family members or friends, the vibration of Buddha. Pure wisdom, pure awareness, pure love. Just imagine that vibration permeating the bodies and minds of all the beings that passes through. Imagine that vibration permeating throughout all of Toronto, eventually spreading it out through all of Canada. In with each breath, with each heartbeat, these pulsations of Buddhaya radiating outwards, extending those vibrations down into the U.S., into the south, the north, the east, the west, eventually across the ocean, all through India and Sri Lanka. Eventually the whole earth is with the thought, may all beings be free from greed, hatred, fear and ignorance. May all beings be free from pain, sorrow and sufferings of body and mind. May all beings have the patience, strength, mindfulness and wisdom to meet and overcome all difficulties in life. May all beings be able to live peacefully and harmoniously and together, understanding the ultimate interconnectedness, interdependent of all things. May all beings be well, peaceful, and wise. May all beings be well, peaceful, and why may all beings be well, peaceful. Dukkha patta chani dukkha baya patta chani baya Soka pata chani soka Hontu sabbe vipanino. Sambhiti o vivanjantu sabarogo vinasatu mate bhavatvantarayo sukhi digayuko Bhavata Sambha Mangalam Rakanta Sabha Devata Sambha Buddha Sambha Dhamma Sambha Sangha Numavena Sadasoti Bhavantuti. Okay, friends, brings out first day of this retreat to an end. But how many are you plan on coming tomorrow? So I'd recommend that, you know, when you go home tonight, you can, you know, try to avoid, you know, watching TV or the news, or putting, you know, kind of negative thoughts and so on in your mind, and you know, even when you go to sleep tonight, try to do, you know, some laying down awareness. When you first lay down on your bed, or lay on your right side, and try to do at least start out with either sending out thoughts of metta or just doing laying awareness. And then tomorrow, of course, a lot of other people, some other people may be coming also tomorrow, so you know, might have to repeat some things over again, but want to try to cover some other aspects of insight and so on. I put a little booklet out on the table. It's a little booklet I wrote a few years ago on the body-mind connection. It's about how yoga and meditation, mindfulness, vipassana meditation can kind of help each other. And how the body and the mind are, you know, deeply kind of connected. And the last part of it is about practicing mindfulness in the daily life and so on. So you're welcome. It's a little Dhammadana book. You can take a copy. Now, there may not be a copy for everybody, so if you know, like if you're in a family or have friends, and then you can share one around so that there's to be enough to go around.